I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's June 30th, and we have a lot to talk about. For the past 3 months, we've spent more than a fair amount of time speaking with some of the foremost MS experts in the world to learn about how COVID-19 might impact people living with MS. One of those experts is joining us again today with an important update. My guest is Dr. Aaron Miller. Dr. Miller is the chair of the National MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee and is also the medical director of the Corinne Goldsmith Dickinson Center for Multiple Sclerosis and a professor of neurology at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Now, last week, the guidance for using MS disease-modifying therapies during the COVID-19 pandemic was updated. And during our conversation, Dr. Miller will share the new guidance for every MS disease-modifying therapy that's currently available. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Miller, there are a few other things that you should know about. Imagine a country in the grip of a viral pandemic that had already counted more than 2.5 million confirmed cases and over 120,000 of its citizens dead. Imagine that as a result of this pandemic, millions of this country's workers had lost their jobs, and along with losing those jobs, they lost their employer-provided health insurance. But I also want you to imagine that this country had a federally mandated health insurance marketplace that provided avenues to gain subsidized health insurance for those workers who had become unemployed. A health insurance marketplace that 457,000 of this country's citizens had already turned to in just a matter of 60 days. Now, if you've imagined all that, then you'd be imagining the United States, where the Affordable Care Act, popularly known as Obamacare, continues to serve as a safety net for individuals and families who have lost their employer-provided health insurance during the pandemic, along with the more than 50 million Americans living with pre-existing health conditions like multiple sclerosis, most of whom would lose their access to affordable health insurance if not for the Affordable Care Act. Now, try to imagine that in the midst of the worst healthcare and financial crisis in modern history, the Trump administration submitted a late-night brief to the United States Supreme Court asking that the Affordable Care Act be completely eliminated. And in its place, well, they've recommended absolutely nothing. And you don't really have to use your imagination for this, because it actually happened last week. And before you fire off your email scolding me for taking a partisan position, the only position that I'm taking is one that supports families affected by MS. Because if the Affordable Care Act is eliminated, these families will no longer have the protection that the Affordable Care Act provides to people with pre-existing conditions. And that includes 100% of the people living with MS. Now, the Affordable Care Act is far from perfect and can certainly stand improvement. But to argue for its total destruction without offering something in its place literally puts people's lives in danger. This case was already before the Supreme Court, and we've talked about it before on the podcast. But choosing to take the extra step of submitting this brief, which really was submitted in the middle of the night, seems unnecessarily cruel and callous. It threatens the well-being of every family affected by MS, among millions of other families who are already dealing with the threat of COVID-19, possibly facing the loss of their job, the loss of their household income, maybe the loss of a loved one. And now, as we see hospitals continuing to fill up, now facing the potential loss of their health insurance. Oh, and there's one more thing to consider. If the Affordable Care Act is eliminated, as this administration has requested, and there are no longer any protections for people with pre-existing health conditions, does COVID-19 itself become a pre-existing condition? This would add several million more people to the rolls of the uninsured. And as I said, the Supreme Court already had this case on their calendar for their next term, although arguments in the case may not even be heard before Election Day in November, and a decision may not be handed down until 2021. As I'm sure you can tell, this issue matters to me, as it should matter to every family affected by MS or any other chronic illness, especially if you're like me and you remember what it was like to try to find health insurance before the Affordable Care Act became law. I'm an MS activist, and as we draw closer to Election Day, I'm sure we'll have opportunities to revisit this issue as we each consider which candidates have earned our vote by supporting the issues that are most important to the 1 million families across the United States who are affected by MS. Last week, I had the privilege of serving as a moderator on a global webcast hosted by the International Progressive MS Alliance. I was joined on the webcast by three world-class MS experts, Professor Alan Thompson, the Pro Vice Provost and Dean of the Faculty of Brain Sciences at University College London, and the Chair of the Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Steering Committee, Professor Maria Pia Sormani from the University of Genoa, a biostatistics expert in MS and a lead in Italy's national COVID-19 and MS study, and Dr. Tim Cutsey, Chief Advocacy Service and Research Officer at the National MS Society, and a fellow member of the International Progressive MS Alliance Scientific Steering Committee. During our conversation, we got what I'd call a very encouraging update on the development of life-changing treatments for progressive MS, and acknowledging current circumstances, we also discussed COVID-19 and MS, specifically what the experts are learning from the experiences of people with MS who have contracted the virus. And we also talked about how people with progressive MS can minimize their risk during these uncertain times. If you weren't able to join us for the webcast, the good news is that you can catch the video replay, and you'll find a link to the replay in today's show notes. While we're on the subject of video replays, the Consortium of Multiple Sclerosis Centers annual patient education program took place this past May 30th. The program was a live virtual event that included presentations on aging and MS, advances in MS research, rehabilitation and wellness in MS, and a presentation by a neurologist who has MS. And all of these presentations were geared toward a lay audience. If you happen to miss this live event, you can still catch the 90-minute video replay, and you'll find a link to that replay as well in today's show notes. Just 2 weeks ago, Dr. Alan Bowling was my guest on the podcast, and we talked about an integrative medicine approach to treating MS. As a refresher, integrative medicine combines the practice of traditional medicine with evidence-based alternative medicine. So during that podcast, I mentioned that people living with MS seem to love talking about non-pharmacologic alternative treatments that help manage their MS. And now the results of a study suggest that people with MS not only talk about alternative medicine, many of them are actively exploring it. Researchers at Oregon Science and Health University surveyed more than 1,000 people living with MS in Oregon and Southwest Washington in what was actually a follow-up to a survey that they had conducted 17 years ago. And they discovered that people with MS are 9 times more likely to talk with their neurologist about using alternative therapies today than they were back in 2001. Of the 1,000 people who were surveyed, about 85% reported having mild to moderate disability, and key findings from the survey showed that 81% of the survey respondents used dietary supplements like vitamins, minerals, and herbs. And that's up from 65% of the respondents in the earlier 2001 survey. 39% of the survey respondents used mind-body treatments like mindfulness or massage, and that compares with 14% in the earlier survey. And 81% of the survey respondents used exercise to help manage their MS symptoms, and that's up from 67% in 2001. About 30% of the survey respondents indicated that they used some form of cannabis to help manage their MS, and there wasn't a real comparison to the 2001 survey because in 2001, cannabis was still illegal in Oregon and Washington. These survey results illustrate how alternative therapies are becoming not so alternative, as interventions like exercise or mindfulness meditation are routinely recommended today as part of conventional MS self-care. And if you'd like to review the details of this study, I'll include a link in today's show notes. As the COVID-19 pandemic continues, many people living with MS are questioning whether their disease-modifying treatment might be putting them at greater risk for contracting the virus or at greater risk for a more serious disease course if they do contract the virus. This high level of concern is leading some people to discontinue their disease-modifying therapy, and too often they're making that decision without first consulting their neurologist. So My Health Teams, a company that creates social networks for people with chronic health conditions, has teamed up with pharmaceutical company EMD Serono to launch an online treatment adherence resource center that's designed to educate people living with MS about the importance of starting treatment and staying on treatment. The resource center is part of the My MS Team network, and if you'd like to check out the MS Treatment Adherence Resource Center, you'll find a link in today's show notes. The decision to make a change in your MS treatment plan should always be done in consultation with your neurologist. And I hope that we can all agree that it's a decision that should be based upon real-world evidence and not the latest social media post you may have come across. While researchers and clinicians are continuing to learn how COVID-19 affects people living with MS, the data that's being collected is beginning to inform us about how the coronavirus interacts with disease-modifying therapies. So this past week, the global guidance about disease-modifying therapies and COVID-19 was updated. And in a moment, I'll be joined by my guest, Dr. Aaron Miller, and we'll discuss the new guidance that's being provided for every MS disease-modifying therapy that's currently available. Dr. Aaron Miller is the chair of the National MS Society's National Medical Advisory Committee. He's also the medical director of the Corinne Goldsmith Dickinson Center for Multiple Sclerosis and a professor of neurology at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Dr. Miller also serves as vice chair for education in the Department of Neurology. Dr. Miller was the first chairman of the multiple sclerosis section of the American Academy of Neurology, and he's participated in numerous clinical trials of new treatments for multiple sclerosis. You may remember Dr. Miller joined me on Real Talk MS just 3 months ago, shortly after the COVID-19 pandemic started working its way across the United States. And I'm happy to welcome him back to update us on what we've learned over the past 90 days about the impact of COVID-19 on people living with MS. Welcome back to the podcast, Dr. Miller.
Hi, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Over the past 90 days, we've seen the National MS Society collaborate with the MS Society of Canada and the Consortium of MS Centers to establish a registry to collect data about the effects of COVID-19 on people with MS who have contracted the virus. Similar efforts to gather patient information are ongoing in Italy, Argentina, and elsewhere in the world. So what are we learning so far from this patient data?
Well, John, I think we're starting to learn a considerable amount, but we still need many, many more cases to draw firm conclusions. As you mentioned a moment ago, there are registries that have been established in a number of countries, including one sponsored by the National MS Society and the Consortium of MS Centers called the COVI-MS Registry. There's been a very large registry in Italy that's been analyzed, and the results are, I believe, under consideration for publication. There's a large registry that's established from a number of countries through the MS International Federation. So far, you know, we have a number of registries, and the numbers of cases of people with MS who have COVID that are being enrolled in these registries is increasing on a daily basis, which will enable us to have a better understanding of the response of people with MS to the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which causes COVID-19 disease.
Do you know, have any common factors been identified among those patients with MS who have died from COVID-19?
Well, it continues to be clear that the main driver of very severe COVID disease and of death in some cases is the combination of the severity of the disability, the age of the patient, and comorbid conditions, such as heart disease, lung disease, diabetes mellitus, in particular. And when you have that combination of events, you are much more likely to be severely affected.
When it comes to the risk of contracting COVID-19, the question on the minds of so many people living with MS is, does my disease-modifying therapy increase my risk? So I'd like to run through a list of MS disease-modifying therapies, and I'm hoping you can share any specific advice, if there is any, for each.
Well, so let me just say, to preface that we really don't have any evidence for that MS in and of itself or any particular disease-modifying therapy increases the risk of actually becoming infected with the virus. The real issue is, of course, it's very difficult to get that kind of data from these registries because we don't have denominators. I think the really more important question is, do these disease-modifying therapies impact the severity of the disease if you do get infected with the virus?
And at this point, do we have enough information to draw any inferences about that?
I don't think that we have enough information to draw firm conclusions. There is certainly some preliminary evidence that suggests that people who are on the B-cell depleting therapies, which at the moment would include in the United States the FDA-approved ocrelizumab and the non-FDA-approved but often used rituximab. Those are what we regard as the B-cell depleting therapies. There is a strong suggestion from some of the data that these people may be at risk for more severe infection. I would again emphasize, however, that I still don't regard this data as absolutely conclusive. It's subject to change as more cases come through. With regard to some of the other agents, the older, sometimes referred to as platform agents, the interferons and glatiramer acetate, or Copaxone, do not seem to increase the risk at all for people, for the severity of disease. And in fact, there's a preliminary suggestion that the interferons may actually have some protective effect. With regard to the oral agents, so that would be Tecfidera or Vumerity, Gilenya, and with relatively little additional information about the newer agents, Mayzent and Zeposia and Aubagio, those drugs are basically not showing any signal that they increase the risk for severe disease. The jury is to a greater extent still out, even though it's still not conclusive even for these oral agents. But the jury is still out with regard to natalizumab or Tysabri. alemtuzumab or Lemtrada and cladribine or Mavenclad. We just don't have enough data on those drugs.
Well, finally, we're seeing the number of COVID-19 cases increasing in the United States. We're seeing the number of hospitalizations increasing at least half of the states across the country. And we've already seen more than 120,000 Americans die from COVID-19. Clearly, this virus is still with us. And I'm hoping you can give us a quick review of the steps that each of us can take to protect ourselves, protect the people around us, and minimize our risk of contracting or spreading COVID-19.
Yeah, so anybody who thinks that we're anywhere near the end of this pandemic, unfortunately, is sadly mistaken and really needs to heed the advice of the healthcare authorities, the CDC, and your local health authorities in terms of protecting yourself. And, you know, now we're really seeing a renewed emphasis on the fact that young people can get sick. And even though they are less likely to get very sick than older people or people with comorbid conditions, they nonetheless do have a possibility of getting very severely ill or even dying. So the fact that you're young should not be a license to avoid the precautions that all of us should be taking, and people with MS should be doubly careful. And so that means limiting your movement around the community as much as you can, always wearing a mask when you're out in public. Masks have clearly been shown to decrease the risk of transmission of the virus or acquiring the virus by something like 6 or 7 fold compared to going without a mask. It's a minor inconvenience to take. And remember, you're not only helping to protect yourself, but you're protecting other people. Hand washing. Every time you are out and about and return to someplace where there's water and soap, that's the best way to rid the virus. The virus is readily destroyed by soap and water, washing your hands for at least 20 seconds, working up a good lather. If you don't have the availability right away for soap and water, then an alcohol-based hand sanitizer is another worthwhile option.
As you said, minor inconveniences at best, and when you weigh them against the amount of grief, hardship, and sometimes heartache that contracting COVID-19 may cause a person and their family, seems like a highly worthwhile investment in all of our time and effort to make this happen.
Absolutely.
Well, Dr. Aaron Miller, thank you once again for providing us with the kind of information that we can rely on. Thank you for all you do every day to improve the lives of people affected by MS, and thanks for talking with me today.
It's my pleasure, and I just want everybody to stay safe and practice those good precautions.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/148. And you'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. I don't think I have to tell anyone listening to this podcast that the COVID-19 pandemic has intensified and in some cases multiplied the challenges of living with MS, from having difficulty affording MS medications, to adjusting to increased isolation, to coping with the added uncertainty of wondering how you or your family might be personally affected by COVID-19. More than ever before, people living with MS need access to reliable information, support, and connection. We're witnessing that even during a pandemic, MS doesn't stop, and neither does the National MS Society. So they've established the National MS Society COVID-19 Response Fund to ensure that the Society can continue meeting the urgent and expanding needs of the MS community during these unprecedented times. During the pandemic, we've seen the MS Society create virtual programming and support groups literally on the fly so that no one has to face MS alone. They've created resources and provided information so that doctors and nurses can deliver the very best care. They've continued to amplify the voices of the MS movement to influence critical public policy decisions, and they've never stopped advancing research to find cures for MS. I know these are financially tough times for a lot of people, but I'm asking that as you're able, if you're able, please make a donation to support the National MS Society. To donate, you can text the word GIVE to 68686, and you'll get a link right to the MS Society's COVID-19 Response Fund webpage. Or if you prefer, I've created an online shortcut to get you to that same webpage. So you can visit realtalkms.com/COVID-19 Response Fund, and COVID-19 Response Fund is all one word, and make your donation. And you'll find that link in today's show notes. However you choose to contribute, please contribute today. It's never been more important. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.